From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The eighth round of UN-backed Syrian peace talks gets underway Tuesday, but the government delegation has delayed its arrival in Geneva. Stefan de Mistura is the U.S. Special Envoy to Syria.
The government did not yet confirm its participation in Geneva, but indicated that we would be hearing from them soon.
The opposition continues to insist President Bashar al-Assad step down as part of any peace deal. A Syrian newspaper said the government's decision to delay its arrival stems from the opposition's position. But de Mistura said he still believes a way can be found to end the nearly seven-year conflict that has cost hundreds of thousands of lives and displaced millions.
This crisis, one of the worst in the history of the UN, now has the potential, real potential, to move towards a genuine political process.
Anthony Billingsley, a Mideast analyst with Australia's University of New South Wales, said the Geneva talks are running parallel with a Russian-backed Syrian Congress, along with Turkey and Iran, that seeks the same end.
Really, what you're talking about is one conference which is effectively powerless but has the moral authority of the United Nations, and the other one which is effectively reflecting the winners in the Syrian conflict.
Meanwhile, on the ground, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said another government artillery barrage of rebel-held Eastern Ghouta near Damascus Monday killed nearly 20 people despite a ceasefire. The U.S. military said it carried out an airstrike Monday against Islamic State militants in northeast Somalia, killing at least one terrorist. The strike took place in the hills near the town of Gandala in the semi-autonomous Puntland region. The U.S. has expanded counterterrorism efforts in the country since March, targeting IS militants as well as larger insurgency al-Shabaab. This is VOA News. U.S. prosecutors have charged three Chinese nationals linked to a cybersecurity company in China with hacking into the systems of three companies to steal business secrets. Su Song is acting U.S. attorney in Pittsburgh.
These cyber attacks resulted in the theft of internal financial analytical communications from Moody's Analytics, the theft of usernames and passwords, as well as approximately 407 gigabytes of data from Siemens, and the January 2016 theft of global positioning technology that was under development at Trimble Corporation.
The cyber attacks were allegedly launched between 2011 and this year. They are tied to the Guangzhou Boyu Information Technology Company that's affiliated with the People's Liberation Army. A Chinese court has handed down a five-year prison sentence to Taiwan citizen Li Mingche, a college lecturer and non-governmental organization rights activist, after finding him guilty of subverting state power. A co-defendant, Peng Yuhua, was sentenced to 7 years. Li disappeared after arriving on the mainland in March. He was tried in September. Indonesian authorities have extended the closure of Bali's international airport Tuesday because of ash from an eruption of the Mount Agung volcano. The airport is located about 60 kilometers from the mountain. Monday, authorities ordered tens of thousands of residents near the mountain to evacuate from a 10-kilometer exclusion zone. The mountain is experiencing its first major eruption in more than half a century. Victorian State Police in Australia have arrested a 20-year-old man suspected of planning to use an automatic rifle for a mass shooting New Year's Eve in Melbourne. Shane Patton is the police deputy commissioner.
The male is one of our high-risk persons of interest. We have been monitoring him for a very lengthy period of time. He's an Australian citizen and he's of Somalian parents.
Police said the man was intending to act alone and had not yet acquired the firearm. In 2014, a lone gunman took nearly 20 hostages in a 16-hour standoff at a cafe in Sydney with police before being killed. Two hostages also died. Britain's Prince Harry is officially engaged to American actress Meghan Markle. A wedding is planned for next spring. In an interview Monday, the prince, fifth in line to the British throne, said the 36-year-old divorcee was easy to find and was quite a catch.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I could barely let you finish proposing. I said, can I say yes now?
She didn't even let me finish. She said, can I say yes, can I say yes now? And then there was hugs and I had the ring on my finger. And I was like, can I give you the ring? And she goes, oh, yes, the ring. So, no, it was a really nice moment. It was just the two of us. And I think I managed to catch her by surprise as well.
Markle, best known for her work in the television drama Suit, she's a global ambassador for World Vision Canada, which campaigns for better education, food and health care for children worldwide. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. An ECOWAS court says the sacking in 2015 of Sierra Leone Vice President Sam Soumana was illegal.
The government reaction is such that we don't recognize the competence of the court in the first place. That is why, since its inception, when we are notified about the matter, we refuse to even send a legal representation.
Abdoulaye Birete is the spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. Gambia's president moves into Yahya Jammeh's official state house. Robert Mugabe's birthday has been declared a national holiday. We'll get reaction. And Catholic bishops in the DRC urge President Joseph Kabila to pledge he will not seek a third term.
We are preparing for elections because our constitution is telling us to prepare for elections. Because our people need elections, not for the bishop. This country do not belong to the bishop.
Lambert Mende is information minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Health officials say they now have the tools to end HIV/AIDS, and we'll look at what's being done to improve care for more than 40,000 HIV-positive and cancer patients in Guinea. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Economic Community of West African States Community ECOWAS Court of Justice says Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma's sacking of then Vice President Sam Soumana was illegal. In its ruling Monday, the court ordered the Sierra Leone government to pay the former vice president his full salary, along with other emoluments lost since his dismissal. In 2015, Mr. Soumana had asked for $250 million in damages. But after he said, after the ruling, that Sierra Leone needs the money more than him, the Sierra Leone Supreme Court ruled in 2015 that President Koroma had the right to sack Vice President Soumana. Abdoulaye Birete, spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma, says the ECOWAS Court has no competence and jurisdiction over the sacking of the former Vice President Sam Soumana.
The government reaction is such that we don't recognize the competence of the court in the first place. That is why, since its inception, when we are notified about the matter, we refuse to even send a legal representation. The reason for that is, whilst we are a party to the ECOWAS Treaty and its attendant protocols, we are also very mindful of the sovereignty of the state, particularly when it comes to legal issues of this nature. Because don't forget, when the former vice president was relieved of his position, he took the matter to the Supreme Court of Sierra Leone as provided for in our constitution. And the Supreme Court utilized Section 124 in arriving at a verdict in which the actions of the president were declared to be in conformity with the constitution. But moving beyond that, even in our constitution, if you go to Section 171, subsection 15, it says our constitution within the sovereignty of the state is supreme. Section 14 is very clear that fundamental principles of the state will not be subjected to any judiciary interpretation beyond the sovereignty of Sierra Leone.
Mr. Birete, first of all, let me ask you, has your government been notified of this ruling by the ECOWAS Court?
We have not yet been notified officially, but the Attorney General and Minister of Justice has issued a statement to say, inasmuch as we have not been notified yet accordingly, we still stand by our earlier decision of not to send a legal representation because we didn't recognize the jurisdiction and adjudicature of the court beyond the sovereignty of Sierra Leone.
As you rightly said, Sierra Leone is a member of the Economic Community of West African States. And don't you think that by you not recognizing the ruling of this court, that you are disobeying a court that was set up by the regional body?
Well, we do recognize that we are a very proud member of ECOWAS. That is why we are, even when it comes to conflict resolution, the president continues to play a leading role in the conflict in Guinea-Bissau, the conflict in the Gambia, and other regional conflicts. And just quite recently, he was also approached by the United Nations to intervene in the conflict of the potential legal electoral tussle in neighboring Liberia. So for us, we remain a very proud member of ECOWAS. But when it comes to the Committee of Justice of the Court of ECOWAS, in this matter, we refused ourselves because we refused to not recognize the competence of this court.
Well, I think your former Vice President, Sam Sumana, he was seeking some monetary damage. Now that the court has ruled against your government, is your government prepared to pay the amount that he's seeking, which I think is in the millions of dollars?
Well, he is seeking about $250 million, and it came at a time when the country is even struggling to even meet its obligations financially for the conduct of the election. Well, we are moving forward as a nation on that. And, of course, in terms of his entitlement, his emulation, the laws of the country are very clear. If he comes, he's a Sierra Leonean. He has the right to determine which political party he wanted to join as a Sierra Leonean. But at the same time, though, any compensation emanating from the court, which we didn't recognize, will be declared null and void.
Abdoulaye Birete is the spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Gambian President Adama Barrow, over the weekend, moved from a temporary office and residence to the official state house previously occupied by longtime former President Yahya Jammeh. The move came nearly 10 months after Barrow was elected president. In last year's presidential election, local media reported that President Barrow had been residing in a hotel. Amy Bojam Sisiho, Director of Press and Public Relations for the Gambian President, tells viewers Peter Clotty that the residence had to be repaired to ensure it's safe for President Adama Barrow to use.
It's a move from a temporary residence and office space to the official and more permanent office space and residence for the presidency.
What does this signify? Because we understood there were speculations that the official resident, until he moved in, people were speculating that there could be chemicals or stashed of weapons that could endanger the life of President Adama Barrow, and that is why he couldn't move there in the first place. Has this been resolved?
Well, as far as I know, there is no evidence of that information. What we knew and what the facts I know about is that a lot of damage were done to the residents, and that was the reason why they were trying to get the dams fixed up.
That might have cost a lot of money for the taxpayers to pay to ensure the president is safe, right?
It not cost money because you need to redo a lot of things, and a lot of damage was done. So definitely it cost money, but I don't know how much it cost. I cannot tell you that.
There were also reports that the president's vision of improving the lives of the Gambians appear to have been hampered by all kinds of things, and that it's proving difficult for the president to get his agenda going. How do you react to such statements coming from Gambians?
I would not validate that information. What I know is that the president works with a team, and that team has been working, and now they were working on a plan, and that national plan has been out and validated, and that was one of the reasons why some of the things that were needed to be done couldn't be done as we were expecting. And secondly, all these things we are talking about in terms of change and transforming the Gambia require forms. It requires attitudinal change, and which each and every one of us who are in or outside within the system of working for, in terms of the country, needs to contribute to make it effective.
How about the president's plan to get citizens involved in terms of the changes that he promised to carry the people along to realize the change that he expects from him to lead the country towards?
I think that is something that he stands by, and he continues to appeal to all Gambians to ensure that we all do our little part to ensure that we achieve our ultimate goal of making the Gambia better for a sustainable system that will ensure that the future generations that are coming will enjoy the Gambia.
Amy Bojan Sisoho is the Director of Press and Public Relations for Gambian President Adama Barrow. She was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Banjul. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am James Barton, Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 28th. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. A spokesman for the Democratic Republic of Congo's government is lashing out at the country's Roman Catholic bishops for urging President Joseph Kabila to pledge he will not seek a third term in office. The bishops, who helped broker the December 2016 agreement between the government and the opposition, says such a pledge would ease public fears and unrest. Following a meeting on the political crisis in the DRC, the bishop said President Kabila should reassure Congolese that he will not seek another term. The Congolese Election Commission, under intense international pressure, has said it will hold elections in December 2018. Information Minister Lambert Mende accused the bishops of being political. He said the DRC is preparing for election because its constitution requires it to do so, not because the bishops want it.
This is something really we can't understand. Elections is to be organized for the end of next year, December 2018. So we are not yet even at December 2017, and they are talking of being candidate or not candidate. We are busy preparing for elections. And they should stop, you know, making these kind of statements. Electoral Commission is working, the Parliament is working, as well as the government, and they are just to put, let me say, a little confusion in the heads of people. The elections are to be held next year by the end, and we are still in November this year. So we are talking of what?
But, Minister, that's a very simple question. Either the president, President Kabila, can say, yes, I'm not seeking a third term, because the bishop said that this, if he makes that assurance...
Excuse me, the president took the commitment to respect the constitution. They are fond of provoking the president to ask him to make a statement every day that he will respect the constitution. Every day, whenever he speaks, he says he will abide by the constitution. What do they want? What is this issue? Should he say every day, I want to kill people, I want to steal, I don't know, I want to go with the wife of someone or what? This is a joke or what? Let them not stop joking with the president. The president is a person that was elected by the people of this country. He deserves to be respected. We know that many of them, they don't like him, but they should respect the institution. You can't wake up in the morning and say the president should tell us that next year he will not run for elections. When did he say that he will run for elections? He never said that he will run for elections. And we have elections after 1 year to come. So why is this issue of elections coming now in the agenda? Why? We are preparing electoral law. We are finalizing the census of electors. We are making security of the country where people will organize their participation to the elections. Why these provocations? This is really totally irrelevant. I'm sorry.
But, Minister, you know, for the opposition, you mentioned the Catholic bishops. It seems to me the government doesn't trust the Catholic bishops, but these are the same Catholic bishops who came up with the December 31st, 2016 agreement that paved the way for some kind of understanding between your government and the opposition.
It is the president who called them, who gave them the mission. Now we can understand that they had a hidden agenda because they lack neutrality. That is something really we can't bear because we are not a Catholic state here.
The bishops also want for your government to publish a plan to fund the election. Announce to the public a plan for you to fund the election.
We are preparing for elections, not for the bishops. We are preparing for elections because our constitution is telling us to prepare for elections, because our laws tell us to prepare for elections, because our people need elections, not for the bishop. This country do not belong to the bishops. I'm sorry, James.
Lambert Mende is Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Zimbabwe's new government has declared each February 2nd as a national holiday to honor former President Robert Mugabe's birthday. Mr. Mugabe ruled the country for 37 years before being removed earlier this month by the military. The 93-year-old Mr. Mugabe and his wife Grace have also reportedly been granted immunity from prosecution. He will also receive his $150,000 salary until his death. Thalenta Mbe, call herself a concerned Zimbabwean. She says Zimbabweans have a place in their hearts for Mr. Mugabe, but not a national holiday to commemorate his birthday. She says all the money spent over 37 years to celebrate the birthday should have been used to build hospitals, roads, and schools.
I think that is not a good idea at all. He has abused power. He is a corrupt individual. We have a place for adoration for him in our hearts, but for now it's okay in our hearts because we saw what just happened over the years. So not only was a big fuss made about this, but the year after year after year, resources that could have been used in hospitals, in schools, on roads, all being directed to his birthday. He was loved by some to the extent that he started to think of himself as a god among men. I think that as Zimbabweans and as Africans in general, we should learn to love our leaders and show them we love them by using ways that encourage them to be responsible and good leaders. But all the time we try and change and reshape society to suit their whims. We cause them to move from bad to worse. Right now, Mugabe is the worst and the oldest leader. His birthday should not be a national holiday. That should be a very productive day when we all go to work and do something to contribute to the economy that he has damaged over 37 years.
But Kalanta, it can be said that led your country to independence. Therefore, he should have a place in history where the people will remember what he did for Zimbabwe today.
That's what I'm saying. Now he's alive, that should not be for his benefit. It's only history that should accord him that place in history. So right now is a time for rebuilding Zimbabwe, not giving accolades. There is a lot of work to be done because Zimbabwe is absolutely rubble. It's devastated. So now all efforts should be focused on rebuilding Zimbabwe.
I'm assuming also that you are against the fact that the government granted him immunity and the fact that former President Mugabe might get millions of dollars for his benefits.
I am really against that. Zimbabwe should be rebuilding. I think that is one thing where even as we celebrate now, we have to be wary about the sitting president now. Right now, the celebrations are really based on the fact that Mugabe is out, not that we have a savior in Mnangagwa, because this right there is an indication that, you know, he's getting a golden handshake. He should not be getting a golden handshake. We should be reclaiming the Zimbabwean resources that were used to build their family empire. They have hotels and holdings outside of Zimbabwe. That's not a good sign for President Mnangagwa to give him money instead of collecting. All this fuss about birthdays is because they also want to get, that's what I'm afraid of, that Emerson also wants to see himself get to where Robert Mugabe did with power. It's a very bad sign.
Talenta Mbe called herself a concerned Zimbabwean. She was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Dallas in Texas. The United Nations reports remarkable progress in containing the virus that causes AIDS. In its latest report, UNAIDS say access to treatment has risen significantly. The UN's goal is to end the pandemic by 2030. Viewer's Carol Pearson spoke to one of the world's leading scientists about whether this can be done.
Dr. Anthony Fauci has been working to end the AIDS pandemic since the 1980s, when having HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, was a death sentence. Now people with HIV can have a normal lifespan if they take their medicine as prescribed. Fauci is a world-renowned doctor at the U.S. National Institutes of Health. He says we have the tools right now to end AIDS.
What I mean is that we have extraordinarily effective drugs. But recently, those drugs have been shown over the past few years not only to save the lives of the people who take the drugs, but also to bring the level of virus in an infected person so low, below detectable level, that it makes it virtually impossible for that person to transmit the virus to someone else.
UNAIDS reports that 21 million HIV-positive people are on treatment. That's more than half of all those living with the virus. There are even drugs available to prevent those who do not have the HIV virus from getting it. But there are 16 million people infected with HIV who are not on therapy, and many of them don't know they have the disease, so they continue to spread the virus. And that's why, even with the tools we now have, Fauci doesn't see an end to AIDS.
In order to get a durable end to the epidemic, we would be greatly helped by an HIV vaccine.
A clinical trial for an AIDS vaccine took place in Thailand several years ago. That vaccine proved to be 31% effective. Compare that to the measles vaccine, which protects up to 99% of those who get vaccinated. We asked Fauci if scientists can develop an AIDS vaccine that is that good.
I don't think we're going to get there with an HIV vaccine, but even a vaccine that's 50-55, at the most 60% effective, together with the implementation of the other advances we have, I believe we could turn around the trajectory of the epidemic and essentially end it as we know it.
Another vaccine trial is taking place in South Africa. The results won't be in for a while, and there's no way of telling if it will be good enough to help bring the epidemic to an end. Meanwhile, getting more people tested, getting more people on anti-AIDS drugs, consistent use of condoms, and limiting the number of sexual partners are the tools we have at hand to reduce the spread of AIDS. Both Fauci and UNAIDS say ending AIDS is up to the global community and how much effort and money it's willing to commit towards this goal. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
There are more than 40,000 cancer and HIV-positive patients in Guinea who are in need of palliative care, according to the Guinea Palliative Care Association. Marie Tongino, president of the association, spoke with Ricky Stryak about what she says needs to be done to improve care for those with life-limiting illness.
We saw there was a huge need of palliative care in Guinea, so I decided to meet some colleagues to discuss about it, if it is possible that we can create a palliative care unit in Guinea, because we can see that other countries around us, like Senegal and others, have palliative care organizations that are helping people. Because we marked that many of the patients that were condemned, that were having incurable illnesses in the hospital, were sent back to their houses or to their home without no doctor to continue the follow-up with them. So while they were living, they accepted our idea.
Is it hard to get pain medications in Guinea?
The pain medication we have in here, you have tramadol, paracetamol, ibuprofen. But actually, we have many of the others, but we don't have morphine.
Does that mean that a lot of people suffer in pain when, if they had morphine, that would ease their pain?
Yeah, of course. Even though we are trying to help some, because you know there are different stages of the treatment in palliative care. So if you pass the first step, you need to continue with the second one. The second palliative, they call it in French, palliative treatment and same palliative. So if you've gone with the paracetamol, the first one, and then the second phase has reached, we need to work with tramadol, morphine, because we have codeine here, which is not seen often, but sometimes we can get it. But the morphine is not actually seen. So sometimes we are obliged to continue with the codeine or the tramadol given to the patient, which will not actually solve, but that is what we have here. We have not yet gotten morphine, and it is really causing problems on some patients. Yes, some that has reached to the level of using morphine.
That was Marie Tongino, president of the Guinea Palliative Care Association. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Conakry. And that is it for this Tuesday, November 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very nice day.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Van Dyke, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.